for July 3rd, 2007, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
So, we're back. We had a good rhythm going for a little while with doing the podcast pretty much every week. And then, I don't know, we got derailed. Things get busy, people go on vacation. It's the summer. We're enjoying the summer. At least it's the summer here in the Northern Hemisphere where I live. It's the Lullabot Drupal podcast. We get together every week and talk about Drupal. Drupal. My name is Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with
Matt Westgate
and
Robert Douglas,
and also
Jeff Eaton,
as well as
Addie Berry,
and last but certainly not least,
James Walker.
Well, goodness, I think this is the most people we've ever had on a podcast. I'm excited, and a little nervous.
There's not as much elbow room.
There's not, but I'm hoping that we'll get some good verbal pile ups. You know, traffic jams. You know, just basically talking over each other. Although it's not happening yet.
That's called a race condition.
So today's podcast, we're going to talk about, we're just going to kind of catch up with stuff. We've kind of been, off the air for a couple weeks and we're going to talk about the, Drupal news and what's happening with Drupal 6, and listener voicemail. People have called in with some questions and we're going to, pick some of those relatively at random and answer them. If you have questions, you can always call 1-877-Lullabot. That's on Skype, Gizmo, or those kind of things. You can dial +1-877-585-5226and leave questions. But let's do some updates and news first. Actually, first we should mention the first thing is we've got new Lullabot workshops. We're doing little weekend workshops across the U.S. This summer. The first
and one of them is in Chicago.
I know Jeff Eaton's hometown, Chicago. You can get to see him in his element. He'll show up in his bathrobe.
What? There's a workshop?
He's going to do that in New York, too, though.
Just put his laptop there. He will come.
Exactly.
It's the Lulla tour. We have a Lulla bus.
Yes, yes. The first workshop is Drupal API and Module Building in Chicago. That's July 21st and 22nd. We're going to talk all about the Drupal API and how to build modules and that kind of thing. You can find out more information about all these workshops at lullabot.com/training. The next workshop is Drupal theming, and that's in New York City on August 4th and 5th, 2 days of theming intensively.
Also going to be gorgeous, by the way. I've seen the location,
the venue,
where like,
yeah,
this is going to be, and it is really impressive.
Yeah, the people at Inc. Magazine have given us their conference room. Their conference
one of
space.
Their board
yeah,
rooms
one there. Of their board rooms to use for the workshop. It should be pretty awesome. And then the next and last workshop of the summer is called Drupal Intensive. And that's in Los Angeles on August 18th and 19th. And that's basically, we're going to build an entire Drupal site in a weekend. So if you're sort of new to Drupal or just kind of looking for Drupal tricks for building websites and stuff like that, we're going to just build an entire, what project did we decide on? A photo sharing site, right?
Yeah.
We're
pretty awesome.
Yeah, not to be confused with, you know, Flickr. we're going to build a Drupal photo sharing site in 2 days. And there you go. You'll learn all the tricks. So, yeah, any more information about all that stuff, lullabot.com/training. And there's early bird discounts that are happening. I think we've extended the early bird discounts. So if you're listening to this, go and get in early while there's still spots available and the discount available. Stuff like that. What news do we have going on in Drupal land? I like how when we get so many people on the podcast, everyone's like, well, I don't want to talk over people, so I won't talk at all. any news with Drupal 6? Did that darn code freeze happen?
I keep hearing
rumors of the code freeze, but
with a few extensions.
Yeah,
it was it went through yesterday, and there were I think five specific patches that have been in progress for a while and are major features, like the update status module that will, you know, notify people if their modules are out of date automatically and stuff like that. Dries said that he wanted to make sure that had a chance to get in, and it's sort of in the final polishing stages. But other than a few things like that, the code freeze is in place, which means that new features and, you know, API changes and stuff like that won't be going in, just like usability enhancements for the front end, performance enhancements, you know, trimming stuff like that up, and then other stuff.
So those things will go in, the performance enhancements and usability improvements and, of course, bug fixing. It's just the things that change the underlying way that Drupal works. Those are no-no.
Right. So when will Drupal 6 come out?
When it's
next
done.
Week.
When it's ready.
The idea is first it goes into beta after an initial sort of roughing out stage, and then after it goes into beta and goes through a couple of versions of that, eventually it'll hit release candidate. And the idea behind that is, I think it's something like a certain amount of time without any new critical bugs and existing criticals being fixed, and then it goes through release candidate, where more people are supposed to go in and test it out and just make sure everything's cool. And then when it looks solid enough, it gets released.
That's cool.
So what do the old-timers say? James Walker, how long does it usually take after the code freeze? 2 to 3 months?
Yeah, the rough guideline is 2 months. Oh, I'm not sure actually on the 2 months, last couple of these, but yeah, more 2 to 3 months. It'll be out in time for the holiday season.
Let's see, what else? Are there any like big features that we should touch on for Drupal 6? Any like things that people should look forward to? We had talked about doing that as a podcast, and we were going to do it as part of this podcast, but maybe we'll do it as next week's podcast. Next week, I put air quotes around next week's podcast. But any big features that we want to just like for people who are saying, yeah, I just downloaded Drupal 5. Should I wait for Drupal 6? What's the difference?
The general rule of thumb is no. Don't wait for a future version of Drupal if you need to build a site now. Drupal 5 is good, but there's still, like, off in the future, there's tons of really cool stuff that made it into Drupal 6. Goodness, we've got a list here, and it just keeps going on and on and on.
Is it mostly end-user stuff or mostly
it depends.
API stuff? I mean, it seems like Drupal sort of flip-flops back and forth.
Well, a lot of it is underlying API changes and improvements that'll make it easier for people to build third-party contrib modules on top of Drupal 6 that do stuff that couldn't previously be done. But there's some things, like if you're trying to build an international or like a multilingual site or something like that, a huge amount of that internationalization stuff is now rolled in and supported directly by core rather than having to, you know, install some additional modules and hacks and stuff like that. So that's a really big thing. The internationalization support is just greatly improved. For themers, it's now a lot easier for modules to expose default template files. So rather than having to go in and like add PHP to your theme files and stuff like that to use a little template file that's easy to edit to override, like say how a node gets displayed on screen or something like that, module developers can expose their own little template files automatically, and themers can just copy those and edit them without touching PHP. So those are a couple of the other cool things. jQuery is starting to appear all over the place. We've got a jQuery password strength checker, stuff like that.
Ooh, cool.
It automatically checks for whether your server can do clean URLs and turns it on when you're doing the installer. It does that via jQuery.
Now that you mentioned that, Jeff, it's worth also mentioning that people who install Drupal 6, even now if you go and grab the development tarball and try and install it, you're going to notice a huge improvement in the whole installation process. And the first place you're going to see that password strength checker is right there in the installation process, because you no longer have to like get Drupal installed and then go create your admin account. Now you do that as part of the installation process. It's really fun. Go try it.
Cool. Well, let's not get too deep into that. We'll do the next podcast. Will be all the new features in Drupal 6 and what people can kind of look forward to with that. But what other news do we have? There's been some stuff happening on lullabot.com. I put up a big article. It was sort of a bit of a dig bait, I guess, called How Drupal Will Save the World. And sure enough, we got on the homepage of Dig with that and generated a lot of comments and stuff like that, sort of around this concept of sort of looking at what we've got with Drupal and what it would take to make it kind of easier for everyone to use. Sort of focusing on I don't know, making it a lot more user friendly and easier to configure and stuff like that. So that is up on lullabot.com/articles. Encourage people.
What's the feedback on that been so far?
The feedback is that I'm a crazy crackpot with crazy ideas. No,
I knew it. I knew it all along.
Tell us things we don't know.
I don't know. No, it's been going really well. Other sort of pseudo related news. I got invited to Foo Camp, O'Reilly's Foo Camp. I don't even know how to explain exactly what that is, other than people should look it up on Wikipedia and figure out what Foo Camp is.
It's the event. It's the event that spawned Bar Camp.
Well, yeah,
if nothing else,
and then people can look up Bar Camp on Wikipedia as well.
Everybody knows Bar.
Yeah, but it's a Tim O'Reilly. It stands for Friends of O'Reilly. I didn't even know that before I went there. FOO. I don't know. It was it's an invite only kind of thing, and Dries Bertart, the founder of Drupal, and I both got invited, and we went and did a little Drupal presentation about sort of related to this How Drupal Will Save the World article, and it was really interesting. We met a lot of influential people in the web world, and if you go to Dries's website, there's a picture of me standing next to Larry Page, the founder of Google. He and I had a very brief conversation about helicopters. He arrived in a helicopter to Foo Camp, and I was trying to convince him to give everyone a ride.
Who doesn't like helicopter rides?
Well, you know, it's supposed to be this participatory event and stuff like that. But it was really interesting to go around and talk to those people about you know, because they'd say, "Oh, what do you do?" And, crazy Drupal guy, talk about Drupal to people, and they'd say, "Oh, I know Drupal, and we're using it here and there, and stuff like that." And it was really interesting to see sort of how Drupal has kind of gotten out there into the world and how people are using it. So,
did you and Dries sleep in a tent?
No. People slept in tents, but we got hotel rooms. It was traveling and tenting and
So where's Google using Drupal?
They're not. Well, actually, I mean, they're doing all the Summer of Code stuff, which is pretty intense. But I don't think they're actually using it in house per se. Yet, who knows? I mean, it's hard to tell. We didn't know Yahoo was using it in house until they basically came out and said they were. So, but the guy's got a helicopter. So, you know, can't argue with that. I don't know. What else? What else is going on? There was some other. We started the Lulla blog on lullabot.com.
That's pretty awesome.
we were finding that the articles section of the site had become kind of formal. I mean, we felt like it was a great place to put up well thought sort of tutorials type articles, or I guess in the case of my How Drupal Will Save the World sort of manifesto style articles. And we were sort of lacking a place to just put up links to, like, hey, look, this is cool. And so we started the Lulla blog. Actually, there's been a whole bunch of conversation sort of spawned around some of the articles that went up there too.
It's nice to not have to feel under so much pressure to be perfect and just be able to say what you want to say. That's the point of the Lulla blog.
Yep. yeah, Jeff, you put up a couple of articles that were...
Yeah, one of the most recent ones that I did, I think the sites, they are a changin'. I've been trying to do bad, sort of clumsy hints at, like, song titles, but...
and that would be Bob Dylan.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for throwing me that lifesaver. No, the idea is, as we've been building lots of sites for clients, and as we've been working with other people in the Drupal community, tools like CCK and Views and the Date module and stuff like that are becoming really, really powerful and really integral to how sites get built. Like in the old days, you would go and you would get your monolithic module that adds like a photo sharing, or module that adds a classified ads section to your site, and all the functionality related to that would sort of be rolled up in this module. The way Drupal works means that there was still a lot of opportunities for these modules to interact with each other, but now it's going even further, where instead you're like actually using CCK to build up the individual content types field by field to match your specifications, and you're using Views module to, you know, build the individual views of this content and, you know, the searchable, sortable listings and stuff like that to match exactly what you need, which is really powerful, and it means that you can do really customized stuff without actually writing code. But it also means that when it comes time to share that stuff with other people, or to roll it from one site to another, or, you know, anything like that, it's a big challenge, because suddenly you're not just trying to say, here's this module I wrote that does a classified ad system. You're saying, well, here's this bundle of like 15 different views that I made and 3 CCK content types, and then these other 6 different modules that add field types, or, you know, add a specific API that I'm utilizing. So what you've got is this like cloud of configuration information, small like little Lego brick style modules that you've assembled. It's really cool. It's really powerful, but it means that there's this whole challenge now in trying to figure out how to share the things that are built in that way and how to roll them out cleanly when you're moving from server to server and stuff like that. One of the Summer of Code students that I'm mentoring, who's working on the Case Tracker module, has actually run into the same problem, because he's realizing that the module that he signed on to do a lot of enhancements for really could be a collection of views and CCK types and some glue code. So he's trying to figure out what makes the most sense to, you know, go forward and build a lot of custom stuff onto this, or just try to provide more generic enhancements that can benefit anything that uses CCK. So,
well, this is becoming a big sort of conundrum, isn't it? Because it's like, well, I could put out the pieces to make this work, and then people might not understand how to put those pieces together.
Exactly.
Or I could put out a complete module and it wouldn't be as flexible.
Exactly. I mean, it's definitely, of all the problems to have, this is one of the nicer ones. I mean, it, as someone who, you know, got his start hacking monolithic modules in Drupal and not quite understanding how to do it cleanly, this is definitely cool. But it's still a big problem, especially for people who haven't yet become immersed in Drupal and know the 80-some different modules that you might want to use to assemble these Lego piece constructions and stuff like that. It's tricky, and there's a lot of different ideas on how to solve it, and there's some good comments on that blog post of people who are sort of grappling with this and trying to come up with good solutions to it. So it's exciting. I think it's a problem that the community is in the process of solving as we move more towards this small pieces, loosely joined approach to building Drupal sites.
Yeah, cool stuff. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, we started the Lola blog as a you know, place for sort of what do we call it, less thoughtful writings, and of course it's actually spawned some really interesting thought, and that article in particular is that way. So cool. Robert Douglas, you've got a really interesting pet project going on. I don't even know if calling it a pet project is the right thing. I mean,
I do. Pet project or crusade might be a different word that you could
maybe,
put on.
Should we call it a pet crusade, maybe?
A pet crusade, sure. Basically, the idea wasn't mine, but we're going to try a group of open source projects. We're going to try and kill PHP 4, basically, or at least give it its respected place in history instead of where it is now, which is basically the de facto standard, what you get when you sign up for typical web hosting packages. So, okay, a little history. PHP is the computing language that Drupal runs on, and like Drupal, it goes in a development cycle and new versions are created. And when I came into Drupal several years back, PHP 3 was on the way out and PHP 4 was the big thing, and PHP 4 has done really well in the world, and runs millions of sites, and everybody has loved it. But it's not a perfect programming language, so they kept developing it. Now they've got PHP 5, which is about 3 years old, and even PHP 6 is coming along. And what has happened is that we've gotten stuck with PHP 4, and we can't develop Drupal, and other open source projects have the same problem. We can't develop Drupal and these other projects using the newer features available and the better performance and tighter security and all of the nicer language constructs that are available. We can't use them because we would instantly break all of the sites that people are running on hosts that don't support PHP 5. So we've got this real classic chicken and egg problem. We can't write for PHP 5 because the hosts don't support it yet, and the web hosts won't upgrade their servers, which takes a bit of work and might actually break some sites. They won't upgrade to PHP 5 because the software that people want to run on them don't demand it. So they're in a rather comfortable position. And the problem goes deeper, and there's been a lot of discussion. The problem goes all the way down to the Linux distribution packages like Red Hat and SUSE and Debian, Ubuntu, and what they package. And fortunately, they're starting to package PHP 5 as well. Okay, so that's all the background. The pet crusade is that Larry Garfield of Drupal fame and myself and Ken Rickert from the Drupal camp and a couple people from Joomla and Mark Delisle from PHP MyAdmin and the leaders of Typo3 and some more projects, we've all come together and we've decided as of February 2008, our projects are going to be open for development in PHP 5.2, which means as soon as the first PHP 5.2 feature goes in to, say, Drupal or Joomla, PHP 4 compatibility is out the window. Now, this doesn't mean the current releases of Drupal and Joomla will be broken for PHP 4. That just means that as of this point in the future, February 2008, we're going to start using these great features and the new security and the new performance and all of the new libraries that are involved in PHP 5 to the benefit of our projects so that we can really make the software the best it is. And the people who want to use those will have to have a hosting situation that supports PHP 5. So we're going to make some people mad, but hopefully we're going to get a lot of hosts to start offering plans that include PHP 5.2 by default. So there's a website for this. It's gophp5.org, and it's not live yet, but it should be live by the time the podcast comes out. And if not, it'll be live like within a day or so. And there you can see the list of the projects that have signed up so far. If you're involved with an open source project that runs PHP or even a proprietary project that runs PHP, you can come to the site. And if you want to support what we're doing, if you want to use PHP 5's features and you want to like give some weight to our movement, then you can sign up on the site and get listed there. If you're a web host and you want to show that you're ahead of the times and very modern and offer PHP 5.2 in your plans, you can sign up and get listed there. And I imagine the site will get quite a bit of publicity, so it's probably advantageous for web hosts to get listed there. And there's also a page for discussion on the site and a place to contact us and a countdown timer, which right now says 216 days until February 5th, 2008, which if you go by the European way of writing dates is 5.2, 2008. So that's my pet crusade.
Oh, those wacky Europeans.
For people that don't know, Robert lives in Germany, Bonn-ish. Are you in Bonn? You're near Bonn, Germany.
I'm in Bonn. I'm in the city.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So he could, you know, write things in the European way just to blend in. As if his American accent doesn't give him away.
When in Bonn.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, that's it just it's a good thing. Basically, I think this is a really good idea. It seems like people have sort of settled in with PHP 4, and even with Drupal, there's been this, thing where we try and support lowest common denominator. However, it's also important to kind of try and bring up that low number and try and get the hosts to upgrade and stuff like that. So,
and I think
there's just a lot of great features in PHP 5, and it could really help Drupal development. If we could use that as the lowest common denominator. So,
and as a good example of that, it's not just, you know, pure geeky, you know, hey, cool, we want to use the latest thing. As an example, the Amazon Tools module, which is one I sort of help out with and help keep maintained, actually has to implement two completely separate versions of the vast majority of its code. One that runs under PHP 4 and another that runs efficiently under PHP 5, just because how PHP handles interacting with external APIs like Amazon and stuff like that has changed so dramatically. It's just a real, real hassle trying to maintain those sort of multiple parallel versions of important code, and moving to PHP 5 would make those pieces of code a lot more efficient, and also it would cut a lot of them just in half in terms of the amount of code that has to be maintained. And that means fewer bugs, it means more efficient performance, it means releases that get important features added to them faster because you don't have to write it twice.
Well, there are even really important features for end users that we're going to be able to add because of this change. For example, if you upload a file to your Drupal site right now, you press upload and you get this little blinky, flashy image that's not really doing anything. It would do that all day if you could just like put that image in your browser, and it would blink all day doing nothing. PHP 5.2, which is the version we're shooting for, actually has an API where you can measure the parts of a file that have gone to a server already. So you can have a real feedback bar and say, oh, your file's now at 20% or 60%, 80%. And in the age of YouTube, that's critical. If you're uploading 20 megabyte files to the server, you want to know, is it working? And how long do I have to sit here before I can go do something else?
Right. So, like most most FTP applications have that, where you can see how much of your file has uploaded and stuff. And we could do that in the web browser with PHP 5.
Right. So this isn't going to be an invisible change to the end user. This is going to be an enabling change that lets us do some things that previously were impossible.
Cool. Well, let's keep moving along. Try not to have this podcast go on for too long. We have some listener voicemail questions that have come into the Lullabot voicemail line. Once again, 877-Lullabot is the number you can call. Let's see what the first one is here that we've got.
Hi. I was wondering if you guys had some kind of module suggestions for doing either JavaScript or CSS menus. I keep getting this need to, make those pretty menus that you point at and they drop down and do all that stuff. And making that happen in everything, including IE6, seems to be nearly impossible. I'd love to hear something. Thanks. Bye.
Drop down, what would you call those? DHTML style menus? Is DHTML not politically correct these days?
It is so passe.
I can't believe you said that.
Whatever you do, just don't call them Ajax.
So
yeah, please.
Addy, you actually maintain a module that does
ish
some of this. Now, people mean a lot of different things by this same thing. I think what this person is calling in with is like to have a navigation on the site that has drop down menus for sub items, and for that there are a couple of modules out there. I mean, I find that usually the modules don't quite work like I'd like them to.
No.
And with jQuery, it's relatively easy to kind of roll your own kind of thing, and maybe starting with some of the like suckerfish style menus that are out there. And there's some. I think there's a there's been a funny evolution, right? There was the suckerfish was the original one, and was that part of a list apart, or was it some other? I'm trying to remember even how it got the suckerfish name.
Yeah,
it was a list apart. It was in a list apart article.
Okay. It was a list apart article, right? And yeah. And then someone improved upon that and called it Superfish. And I think that there's a jQueryized version of the Superfish menus out there if you Google for them, and those are pretty good sort of CSS related, a little bit of JavaScript kind of hierarchical menus. But then there's also some like kind of pre-made modules for Drupal, and probably the one that most people are familiar with is called Nice Menus, which is the one that you maintain, Addy, right?
Right. Well, I help maintain. I don't want to claim ownership of it.
I haven't really looked at that probably in almost a year or something.
Neither has anybody else.
Which is why you maintain it, co-maintain it. How does it or does it not work?
It still needs IE6 love. IE generally, IE6 in particular love. There's not an actual stable release. It's still just a 5 dev release, because it's not working smoothly yet. And I recently have not had time to really focus on it. For a while there, I was being paid to focus on it. So it was getting some work done, but I really just haven't had time, and I haven't noticed there's some activity in the queue. I should probably go check that out and see if there's some commits I can do or something. But there's also this thing called Lucid Menu, which I have not actually used myself, which is a JavaScript-based one. Nice Menus is CSS-based, and it only uses JavaScript for IE6. And it uses like funky iframe stuff, and it's really squirrely what it needs to do. But it's basically a CSS based menu system, whereas Lucid Menu is JavaScript only. And I was talking with someone on IRC who's having issues with Nice Menu, and he checked out Lucid Menu, which he was like, well, that's all cool and stuff, but it doesn't degrade nicely because it's just JavaScript. So he really wanted to use Nice Menu and went back to that and continued to fight the good fight against IE. So, but yeah, so really depends. I mean, if JavaScript's fine and you don't care about it not degrading, I haven't checked Lucid Menus myself, but maybe that's a good one. But Nice Menus needs love, and if anybody wants to help, I'm more than willing to commit patches that fix things.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing with a lot of these, is it's easy to sort of step outside the realm of accessibility pretty quickly, especially when you start doing sort of JavaScripty, Ajaxy kinds of things. I mean, that's another reason to look at things like the suckerfish family of hierarchical menu display kind of stuff, because well, I mean, a list apart people are sort of the final word on accessibility on the web, and stuff that sort of emanates out of there tends to be generally good in that area. Yeah, I don't know. There's no like ta-da kind of answer to this one. I mean, there's some stuff like, I know, Earl Miles of Views fame has a module called DHTML menus that basically just sort of collapses the existing menu structure in sidebar block kinds of things, as opposed to talking about sort of primary and secondary navigation, which these other things focus on more. and then also, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Ted Serbinsky's module called Simple Menu. Is that what it's called now? It was called Menu Bar at one point, and I think it's called Simple Menu now.
Yeah, it is.
And that one's a lot more for administrative menu stuff.
But we can only pick one menu that will be your simple menu.
Yeah, that's
You can't pick all your different menus. They're going to be different ones or something like that. You just can only pick one, and normally it's the administration one.
Yeah, and that's more for when you want to step out of your design. So usually, lots of times when you get a design from a designer, they haven't considered things like where the administrative menu will go. And so this one, it kind of pulls it out of the design and floats it up the top of the page and, kind of handles a lot of that stuff. And it's very, you know, Windows-like or Mac-like. I mean, it's like menus, on your menu bar. You have a menu bar, and that kind of thing. But I don't think it's the kind of thing that I would expose to anyone other than the administrator, just because it's not, I don't know, not like that. It's not how I think of that. So again, you know, this is sort of that problem in Drupal where menu means so many different things, and even just saying, well, I want dynamic menus. It's like, well, where, how, what, you know? So there you go. How's that? Wishy-washy answer enough for everyone?
I'd just like to jump in and say that I fear what I do not understand, and I do not understand DHTML menus, so I'm just sort of cowering here in the corner.
I will say, I did a site back on Drupal 4.4, where I just used the suckerfish, because, yeah, the suckerfish style is really just a series of CSS-based hiding and showing of list items, and then you style them. And so I did, back on a Drupal 4.4 site, just strictly at the theme layer, right? Just applied this CSS to the primary links menu, or primary navigation menu, and it worked quite well for a long time. So depending on what you mean by menus and where, it's possible just to do strictly at the theme layer.
Right. Yeah, certainly. And that degrades really well, certainly for browsers without JavaScript, since it's not JavaScript-based. And then for people that aren't using CSS, they've already got some issues going on the display. And,
right. Well, it's also beautiful for search engine optimization, because essentially what you get in your HTML is an unordered list of your entire menu structure. So it's all kind of right there and all crawlable by search engines. So it's pretty neat side benefit.
Cool. Let's see what the next question that we've got is.
Hey, guys. It's Charles Tanton speaking from South Africa. Want to say thanks for the podcast. It's really great, and I've learned a lot about Drupal from it. I've got a question related to title fields in Drupal, and I've got a site which has some very long titles, and they get cut off because I think there's a limit to the size of the title field. Have you guys got any suggestions on how to go about changing this, whether it's hacking the content module or for any other ways to do this without hacking? Thanks for the great podcast. Cheers.
Long titles. Jeff Eaton, there's a distinct lack of DHTML JavaScript questions in there. So
indeed, it comforts me. There's a couple of different ways you can do something like this. Honestly, the hardest thing you're going to do is trying to make a single title field display in multiple. Well, actually. No, we're ad-libbing this. This is like Lullabot in real time.
Well,
there's
a couple of things, right? I mean, the limitation on the title field length is a limitation at the database layer, right? I mean, I think it's reflected in the length of the HTML field. It'll only allow a certain length. At least if it doesn't, it's a bug. These two things should be the same length. But basically, yeah, you have a certain length of what you can enter into the title field, and that's because the way it gets stored in the database is limited, basically for database optimization, right? And so it's something like 255 characters or something along those lines.
It's actually only 128 characters.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So there's that. So one thing that you could do, is sort of a way around this. I mean, so one thing you could do is you could hack Drupal and you could hack, you could go in and change the database definition for that column in the node table. However, that will be a problem if and when you go to upgrade and stuff like that. And this is generally not considered to be a good idea.
Don't be evil. Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, in general, and for people that haven't heard us say this on the podcast before, don't hack Drupal. Drupal's designed not to be hacked, and there's usually a way around things. In this case, it's going to be a little bit kludgy, but what I would do is use CCK and create another field called, I don't know, what would you call this? Long title, maybe?
Title 2.
Yeah, long title. Title 2. And then you could use... there's a module that I really like. It keeps coming up, called Auto Node Title, which will and can suppress the original title of the node and use some sort of, kind of programmatic scheme, some sort of a template. So it could be the username, would be the name of the title of the node or something like that. But, I think that there's a way to do a truncated, title, and so
you'd have to use a short snippet of PHP with the auto node titles module, but it would let you like look at that long title and just drop pronouns and truncate it,
just use the first, I don't know, 80 characters of it or the first 100 characters of it with a dot 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 at the end or something, and then Drupal's sort of internal guts would have some sort of a title that it could display in places and stuff like that. But then also I would, at the theme layer, display title 2 or long title instead of the short title in places where you wanted to display the title on the node page and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's what I would do. You guys have another opinion on that?
Another way to do that, and this would require a bit more code, one of the drawbacks of the auto node title module is that it actually does change the title as it's listed in the database. Another way to do it would be to write a module that uses hook node API. So whenever the node is viewed, you could determine whether or not it's being displayed like in teaser mode or full mode or something like that, and show like, and it would actually swap out, substitute like a short title when you're seeing it in a teaser list, but a long title when you're showing it on the node's full page view or something like that. You would still use like a separate CCK field to store your long title versus short title, but that kind of approach would also let you dynamically determine, you know, what scenarios the long or short title is used in.
Right. Yeah, that would sort of solve it in both ways. You wouldn't have to deal with the theming issue so much. You could just basically using a hook node API, and it would probably be the load case, I guess.
You could actually do that on load, or you could just do it all ghetto style and do it on view, and just so that everything would stay the same until it actually gets rendered out to the screen.
So maybe a combination of those things, and it'd be a relatively short module. But any coding is a larger hurdle than no coding.
Exactly.
So yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good solution. That's how I'd do it.
Woohoo!
All right, next question.
Hi, thanks for your podcast. I do have a suggestion that maybe you could run through a little bit of your thinking on when to go from a regular website to maybe a blog type software, something like Contribute, and when something like Drupal is needed, just to give us some idea of where our planning might fall on that spectrum. Thank you.
So this is a relatively more of a philosophical question at the tail end of this. What we've got is sort of a technical podcast, but this is a good question. You know, basically he's asking, when should I use Drupal and when should I not use Drupal?
Can I give my raving zealot answer?
Yeah.
Always use Drupal. Because the bottom line is Drupal, while kind of its history is in the community building sort of style of sites with, you know, blogs and forums and all that stuff, it's actually being used increasingly successfully for smaller, simple sites. But that said, I'm sure there's lots of people that would disagree with
it's scalable. So you could, you know, if you were setting up a blog site and thought that, at some point I might want to start selling t-shirts on my blog, or I might want to start posting event information, you know, have a calendar on there, or add forums or that kind of thing, then Drupal's a good way to go to get started, because you could conceivably do that, as opposed to starting with a more blogging specific software. Then you'd end up needing to export everything and figure out how to export and import it over.
I give my like kind of raving zealot, but also
the pragmatic zealot?
I can't conceive of myself giving an answer that doesn't have at least a hint of raving zealot. But
sure. Ask the raving zealots. Should I use Drupal?
What kind of answer was he expecting? He called the Drupal podcast.
Jeff Eaton, let's hear your answer.
Basically, you know, making like a static site, you know, in Dreamweaver or GoLive or, you know, whatever you're using. If you've got a relatively static site that is not going to change and it's like essentially brochureware, you're probably not going to face much hassle with that. What you will see is that if it gets larger as it starts to grow, if you start trying to maintain it and update that information, it's going to turn into a real hassle, because you're going in and modifying lots of static files. That's the traditional case for a content management system or something that you modify, you know, via a user interface or whatever. Going to like a blogging system like WordPress or Movable Type or something like that, that's that's geared really heavily towards a site where the focus of everything that happens on the site is like a chronological listings of updates, or, you know, here's what's happening with our company, and it's very news oriented and very time oriented. People come in and they see what's latest, and they can read down and see older stuff. You can put additional pages sort of around that, like an info page or an about us page, but the focus of it really is on that chronological listing. When you start moving to something like Drupal, it can display things in that way, but the advantage is that it's a lot easier to begin adding on additional stuff like contact forms that let people fill out, you know, questionnaires about what kind of, you know, what their needs are, and then send something to you for a quote, or there's a lot more opportunities to expand it into different ways of displaying your site's information. You could have, you know, a product catalog alongside your news section, alongside who works here and profiles of all the company employees or whatever. You know, it's, if you feel that you're going to want to build it out in the future with those kinds of features, and you don't want to have to revisit things and sort of rebuild the whole site from scratch every time you want to do those bits, Drupal is definitely going to be helpful and definitely going to be a big jump over blog-focused software, or certainly over hand-rolling stuff. But if you're still in that initial spot where, you know, yeah, we've got five pages, we update it every couple of months, you may not really have the need for anything more complex than what you've got already.
Well, and Drupal is more complex, you know, and you're taking a lot more into your own realm of responsibility. I mean, mm-hmm. one of the great things about WordPress and movable type and all those kind of things is there's all of these themes out there for them. So you can just kind of pick from a gazillion themes and say, oh, this one works. Whereas for Drupal, not so many. I just moved my blog over to Drupal from Movable Type, and I actually used a theme system that you built, Jeff, the Gutenberg, which basically allows you to take any Movable Type theme and use that on Drupal, which is pretty darn cool, I have to admit. And so I was able to kind of pick through a bunch of those, and after only a very minor amount of customization, made it my own. So, so there's stuff out there like that, but I mean, out of the box, it's not as simple, not as easy. But it is generally, in our opinion, more powerful. I'm going to stop saying in our opinion, it is more powerful.
Think of it as an investment in future enhancements.
Well, the looking forward one's an important one, because, I mean, depending on what road you go down in the initial, oh, it's going to be simple phase, you may actually be creating a lot more work in the long run when you have to, you know, make that switch. And it's usually pretty, I mean, particularly in like if you have a small company and you have a website, and you think, oh, and you start going through things like, well, we're going to need, news or press releases about our company, or it would be nice to have, and it would be nice to list our products and things like that. It starts ballooning pretty quickly. And if you've got a system already that can handle all that, when you're ready for it, you're much better off.
Well, that's that whole thing. I mean, it's my particular excitement when CCK came out was the ability to add extra fields to things at the last minute, because the client never asks for things up front. They say they want something up front, and then the day before launch, they say, oh, we need to keep track of middle name as well on everyone, and, and their past titles that they've had at the company, and, you know, all these extra bits and pieces. Drupal, particularly with CCK, is really good at that stuff. And in general, Drupal's a lot more flexible. So if you're stepping in with a client and you're not quite sure that they want what they say that they want, you might be better off with Drupal, because it's going to be more flexible and be able to do what they want when they decide to, at the last minute, you know, the day before launch. Oh, and we want a bulletin board system. You know, I thought we made that clear. Oh, I just thought every website had a bulletin board system. You know, it's not so easy to stick that into WordPress.
Well, and that's why being a Drupal consultant is so easy, because you just say, sure, we can do that.
James, you just gave away our secret.
Oh, I mean,
we'll have to look into that.
Yeah, that's going to take weeks. I'm sorry.
Our whole consulting business with one line just went out the door. Oh, well. Well, I guess we should just probably end the podcast now.
Game over.
Well, cool. We'll just leave it at three questions today. If other people have questions for the Lullabot Drupal podcast, you can call 877-Lullabot. That is 1-877-585-5226. We'd love to hear from you. Pick some questions at random and answer them on random listener voicemail podcasts like this one. Actually, most things we do are random, so. And again, workshops, early bird discounts, lullabot.com/training. Go check it out. Come out to Chicago for the weekend and learn some stuff.
Go Cubs!
And get to see Jeff Eaton in his house coat.
In his Chicago Cubs house coat. With magic.
Man, there's going to be some disappointed people.
Cool. Well, yeah, thanks for coming on the podcast. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Adios. Bye-bye.